The Chief Executioners of France, the Sanson family. A new Sanson takes over. On the 13th of Vendemiaire, which is October the 5th, 1795, young Corsican artillery officer Bonaparte succeeded in putting down an insurrection by the Parisian populace, known as the Whiff of Grape. This was the first in a series of victories that would ultimately win him the title of emperor. On September the 4th, 1 month before this uprising, another young officer named Henri Sanson confronted his future and decided upon a course that would win him a title, that of Monsieur de Paris. Young Henri had eschewed the scaffold to join the National Guard in the late autumn of 1793, experienced a rather alarming few days in the period following the terror. On the 9th of Thermidor, he had received orders from his commanding officers, orders emanating from the Commune of Paris, take his company to the Place de Grève. A few hours later, he and his uncle, Pierre Charles Sanson, a lieutenant in the same company, had been transferred to the Quai d'Orfèvre, headquarters of the municipal police. Shortly after their arrival, they watched Robespierre, escorted by two gendarmes, enter the Palais de Justice, which adjoined the police headquarters on the quai. Robespierre the terrorist, a popular figure with the police, did not remain there long. A delegation from the Commune prevailed upon him to go to the Hotel de Ville, where, much to their surprise, he was received with cheers and applause. By this time, the two Sansons had surmised that events were not proceeding too well for the Commune, and concluded that if they were known to have been in the vicinity of the police headquarters, their own position might be suspect. Anyone seen with or near Robespierre ran the risk of being tarred with the same brush, so they returned to their section, thankful to have escaped a dangerous area of the city. Unfortunately, their presence had been noted. On the 14th of Thermidor, they and the rest of their company were denounced and accused of having offered their services to Robespierre and his henchmen. 43 members of the company were arrested and sent to the concierge, where it is said that Henri Sanson occupied the same cell in which Marie Antoinette had been confined. Fortunately, however, the law of the 22nd pariah had been abolished, and they were permitted to retain the services of a lawyer. Because of Charles Henri's large acquaintance, the old executioner succeeded in hiring Claude Chauvet-Lagarde to plead his son's case. Chauvet-Lagarde had defended Marie Antoinette, Charlotte Corday, and the king's sister, Madame Elizabeth, but now he was more successful. 42 out of the 43 were acquitted. The only man found guilty of treachery and sentenced to die was Joseph Julien Lemonnier, the captain of the National Guard. Had Sanson been convicted, his own father would have been ordered to execute him. The young man had assisted his father during the beginning years of the Revolution, had lived through the terror, had witnessed all of its atrocities, and had narrowly escaped the guillotine himself. Small wonder that he should hesitate when it came time to choose between staying in the artillery or assuming what had, if not a hereditary position, then at least a tradition in the Sanson family. He's personally recorded his father's advice to him on the subject of his future, quote, "It is your turn to take on the responsibility and the trust that has belonged to our family. The post will bring you more than 12,000 livres a year. You would be wise to take it, my boy, because you must understand that the prejudice against us will always exist and prevent you from advancing in rank. It may even deprive you of your rank of captain. This way, you will live in peace, and at least no one will have the right to meddle in your affairs." End of quote. It must have been a difficult decision to make, for being an officer in the National Guard meant that Henri enjoyed not only the privileges of rank, but what was for the Sanson family an extraordinary freedom. He could walk the streets of Paris and the provinces as a respected member of the community. He was considered a citizen, not a pariah. But he had grown up in a household of executioners. He had to listen to his uncles and his father speak of the trials and tribulations that confronted executioners when they tried to live and act as other people. He had experienced prejudice, had been a victim of insults himself. A realist? Fatalist? A coward? He may have had a little of each. He had been a fool. He had refused to recognize the truth in his father's words. And Henri Sanson was neither a fool nor a gambler. Better a guaranteed income than no income at all. He resigned his commission in the National Guard, and in August of 1795, succeeded his father as Monsieur de Paris. A tall, vigorous, rather good-looking man, he is depicted in most of the contemporary accounts of having the build of a Hercules, despite a bald head, and he lost his hair quite early in life. He had classic features and a wardrobe that marked him as a dandy. Grace Dalrymple Elliott, an Englishwoman, confined in her recollects of prison in 1793, described her first sight of him. Quote, I was much shocked one day, and going into the gaoler's room where we were used to sometimes go when we wanted anything, he was sitting at a table with a very handsome, smart young man drinking wine. The gaoler told me to sit down and drink a glass too. I dared not refuse. The young man then said, well, I must be off, and looked at his watch. The gaoler replied, no, you will not begin until 12 o'clock. I looked at the man, and the gaoler said to me, you must make friends with this citizen. It is young Sanson, the executioner, and perhaps it may fall his lot to behead you. I felt quite sick, especially when he took hold of my throat, saying, it will soon be off your neck. It's so long and so small. If I'm to dispatch you, it will be nothing but a squeeze. Mrs. Elliot, who regained her liberty after an 18-month stay in various prisons, was quite obviously saw herself in retrospect as the heroine of heroines. Her journal resembles nothing more than the perils of Pauline, but despite her fears, she was not too terrorized to notice the very handsome, smart young man. Henri was 26 years old when she saw him on a day shortly before the death of Marie Antoinette and a matter of weeks before he entered the National Guard. Now, Henri was married during the Revolution, but there's no record of it. Either the nuptial mass was celebrated by a non-juring priest or it was only a civil ceremony. In October of 1817, the union was sanctified in the Church of Saint-Laurent. His bride, Marie-Louise d'Amnieu, born October the 14th, 1776, belonged to a well-to-do family who were no part of the Confederation of Executioners, which is another departure for the Sanson. According to all reports, she was a beautiful woman and a faithful and devoted wife. They had four children. Henri Clement, their oldest, born 1799, would succeed his father. Two girls, Marie Gabrielle, born in 1802, Adelaide, born in 1804, both married executioners. The former wedding the executioner of Lyon, the latter the executioner of Versailles. A fourth child, Nicholas Eugene, was born in 1810, was baptized in the Church of Saint-Laurent, as were all the children, but nothing is known of the second son. Like his forebears, Henri Sanson led a quiet, ordered life, preferring the company of his family to that of outsiders. During the first years of his marriage, he lived in the Rue de Saint-Jacques-de-Bouchier in the quarter of the Les Halles, but subsequently moved into his father's house on the Rue Neuve-Saint-Jean. Sometime after 1818, he acquired a dwelling at 31 Bis-le-Rue des Marais. As if the fact of living under his own roof indicated the necessity of change, he settled into the mold of a solid bourgeoisie father of the family. His main meal was served at 1 o'clock. At 5, he took a light repast known as a goûter, and his supper was put on the table at 8. Afterward, he enjoyed a game of pique with the family. Then, like his predecessors, Henri did not permit his aides to become an integral part of the family. They lived in the outbuildings on his land and entered his house morning and evening for prayers, but they did not act as house servants, confining their usefulness to the scaffolding. So we will leave the new Henri Sanson to rest for a little bit, and we will continue with his background and then his early life. But certainly his tenure as executioner of Paris is not anywhere near as hectic as his father's. With the end of the terror, there are still people to get revenge on, but under the Napoleonic era, guillotining, execution, etc., and so on, was relatively limited, and you do not have the kangaroo courts anymore. Now, the sources for this, The Legacy of Death by Levy, The History of Capital Punishment by Scott, The Encyclopedia of Murder by Wilson, Cullen, and Pittman, History of the Guillotine by Kershaw, Septgeneration Executioners, 1688-1847, by Henri Sanson, and Madame Tussaud's Memoirs by Madame Tussaud. So I hope you enjoyed that. And as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out the CDs. And if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.